Hello and welcome to the Sport of Business podcast, where we hope to give you great information, great advice, and great content to hit a home run out of the park with your career and anything you do in the business world. I am your host, Gabe Polipnik. For those of you who are joining us from the Western CEO Trade Show, welcome. I'd like to give you a huge thanks for supporting the class throughout the year, going to the trade show. And a special thanks from me personally to you for checking out the podcast. And I hope you like it. I hope you enjoy it. And I hope you come back for more. For the first guest on the podcast, we have, to me, a special connection. He's actually a brother of mine, Dick Polipnik. Dick Polipnik is the founder of Online Growth Systems and the host of the Dick Polipnik Show. He is the National Federation of Independent Businesses named him a top young entrepreneur of the year. AdFed listed him on 32 under 32, and he has been featured on and collaborated with Business.com, Nickelodeon Studios, Worldwide Fund for Nature, Clean Energy Resource, and more. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Dick Polipnik. Dick, how are you?
I'm doing great, Gabe. How are you?
I'm awesome. Well, first of all, thanks for coming on today. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. So,
absolutely. Yeah.
For an icebreaker, I'd like to ask you about quite a few years ago. In eighth grade, you were brought up on the JV hockey team where you averaged 2 points per game. And you contributed to the team in various ways. I remember the stories. I remember watching the games. You were a leader for checking, assists. You were just a force to be reckoned with on the ice. Looking back, if you had to kind of analyze and decompose some of the qualities that you had at the time that gave you success at such a young age for something like hockey, what do you see in yourself now that you had even back in eighth grade that has attributed to your success today?
That's a great question. One thing that I think stood out that made me a unique player back in the day on the ice that I think has translated as I, you know, grew up and went to college and, even if it was just for one semester, you know, and then eventually started multiple businesses afterwards, is acting like you deserve to be there and acting like you, you know, to kind of tie it into your sports theme. You know, one thing that we always heard from our coaches growing up was, you know, when you get a touchdown, act like you've been in the end zone before, you know what I mean? You know, kind of have that humility piece, but, I was always one of the smallest players on the team, but I always led the team in checking. And some of my favorite memories were, and this, this is the hockey player in me coming out, you know, this, I don't try to do this in business, you know, necessarily, but in hockey, I just knew that if I checked at every opportunity, even if the person was, you know, twice my height and twice my weight, if I would just hit them every single time that the opportunity arose, you know, they have the puck, you know, and I would go for them. Even after they would pass, I would complete the check. I would finish, you know, I'd follow through with the commitment. You know what I mean? I wouldn't bail and, you know, be a, you know, a puck puppy and just follow the puck, right? I would complete the check. And what would happen is the whole first period, I would just kind of be like this little mosquito that would just kind of be annoying. But then once in a while, I'd land a really, really good check and, you know, knock somebody on there. Am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Go for it.
Well, you tell me, man. But I'd knock somebody on their ass, right? And then after, you know, the second period, then they'd start to flinch a little bit. You know what I mean? Because they knew they're like, God, that's little shit. You know, he's going to check me no matter what. You know what I mean? And then by the third period, they would start panicking. They would do a panic pass. And that would cause the puck to maybe go in the, you know, they would just ice it or dump it in the corner where one of my teammates would pick it up. Or, you know, shit, maybe I'd even come out of that little that little scram with the puck. And that's kind of how the game would progress. Is I'd go from Mosquito to second period, they'd start to flinch, and by third period they would panic because they would see me coming because they know that I was going to check them, right? And then that's what led to those opportunities to, you know, average 2 points per game. You know, it was typically a goal and an assist, and then I always tried to go for the Gordie Howe hat trick, you know what I mean, and get the penalty every game. And which most years I led the team in penalties too, except for our junior year, Zach Mettenberg took that title away from me. But yeah, it was so I think as far as business goes and how that kind of translated was commitment and follow through and being in it for the long game. You know what I mean? Not just following the carrot at the end of the stick of, you know, just following the puck whenever the opportunity arises, but following through with the execution and the strategy that you have and knowing that it might not yield results for you in the first period or the first decade of your life, but it's going to be the best strategy long term. And that's how I like to approach business as well, as I like to think things in the long game. It's a long-winded answer to your icebreaker.
Well, I think that shows a relentless tenacity too, that definitely you could carry over into the business world, into your career, that, you know, just being relentless and always, like you said, coming through with those checks, even if you were just a little mosquito on the ice, just always coming back and back and back and back, and always, just like in business, if it's a salesman, you know, what's the success rate of a salesman? You know what I mean? Always coming back, always trying it. And that the competitive nature, I think is definitely a strong suit for business too. You know, if you want to compete to succeed, to be the best, and if you're not trying to be the best, then what's going to drive you to have good quality product and good content out there?
Yeah, actually competition is, if anybody's familiar with like the StrengthsFinder tests, I took that when I went back to school in 2018 for software development, and that might be an interesting story we could dive into too. I went to a boot camp, which is, it's pretty much, it consolidates 4 years of, you know, the equivalent of a 4-year degree into 6 months by stripping out all the generals. And instead of having, you know, two classes a week on Tuesday, Thursday, you have 80 hours a week for 6 months, and it's super intense and you barely sleep and it's crazy, right? So went to software development school for that. So I learned how to become a developer and write code in 6 months. And through that process, one of the things they do is they have you do a StrengthsFinder test. And when I got my results back, you know, I think there's like, I don't know, 30s, 40 something different strengths that you can have in order based on the answers you give in this kind of psychological analysis survey thing. And my number one quality was competition. My number one strength. And I just couldn't understand that. And I was asking the consultant that came in to tell us what our results meant. I said, how is competition a strength? You know, and I'm thinking of like Monopoly, you know, and how, you know, the blue ocean strategy of, you know, you want to, the less competition you have, the better. That's an advantage. You know, I'm like, so if this is my greatest strength, you know, I'm in deep trouble. And he said, no, it's your competitive drive. It's the fact that you thrive on not conflict, but you have, when you have adversity and you have an obstacle to overcome, that's when your strengths come through the most. You know what I mean? When there is an opponent, you know, something to overcome, whether it's a business obstacle or an actual competitor in business or a team that you're playing. So it's interesting that you mentioned competition, because that's actually apparently my number one strength. So.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. When you're pushed, then definitely the strongest colors come out, because, you know, under pressure is when that those diamonds are made. Otherwise, nothing happens. You know, you sit back and relax.
Right.
So, back to the high school days. I kind of wanted to relate. So no matter what major sports you're in or whatever athlete in the world we're talking about, they all had a pre-pro career before they went pro. Whether it was their high school sports or their college sports, or maybe they were in something like, you know, a little American league before they went completely pro. And to me, that for you, you're before you went pro, I believe you merged two companies when you were 17 for your lawn mowing business. Tell me about that experience.
Yeah. So I had my first legitimate business. You know, I mean, I grew up, as you know, this is actually my go-to answer for my backstory is I actually talk about, I don't know if you were born yet, but it was mostly, you know, Noah and Philip, but I would say, but my first entrepreneurial knack started to show through when I would take my brother's stuffed animals and I would take out a little, you know, fold out card table on the sidewalk in front of my folks' home. And I would sell my sibling stuffed animals to people who were walking by. But I got the kibosh put on that from the Fed. You know what I mean? So I'd sell you guys' shit to people who would walk by. I don't know if you remember that or not, but
sure.
So my first legitimate business was it was called Richard's Handyman Service that I started when I was 14, and I scaled that company to the point where when I was 17 years old, I had acquired one of my competitors, which was this other lawn mowing company. And at that point, we had multiple services. We weren't just doing lawn care. We were also doing landscaping. We were doing small remodel and demolition projects. So when we merged my competitor, that mowing company with Richard's Handyman Service, that merger came through with the new brand that became Everything Property Maintenance, which is still around today.
I heard it's a great company too.
I heard so too. It's got a really kick-ass manager. But
I heard that too.
Really good looking, I hear too. You know, but
absolutely, absolutely.
Hashtag
well said.
Not sponsored. You know, for all your lawn care needs. No. Okay. So.
No, but seriously, if you do have a lawn that needs to be mowed, give me a call.
So. That experience, so we had about, I think I had about 10, no, I had 20 accounts that were, you know, weekly mowing. That's kind of how I measured that was like the yard, the scoreboard per se for sports wise of the growth of the business. I mean, just for the lawn care stuff, that's not including, you know, the landscaping and the demolition stuff, but we had 20 accounts on my company. And then the one that I was acquiring had 10 accounts, but they were like, these are like decent accounts. Like these are, you know, town associations, you know what I mean? So not just one house. These are, you know, 30 houses at a pop, right? So pretty decent size. So right. By the time it was all said and done, we were probably, my company was a little bit bigger than my competitors, but it was a pretty even acquisition or merger. And I paid a handsome penny, especially for a 17-year-old. And I did it all cash because that was part of my strategy. My growth strategy was acquisition. Which continues to this day. I took that habit, and that's still how I expand my other companies as I try to acquire competitors and stuff like that. So I paid a nice sum, all cash down, no loan, whatever. And what happened was I had negotiated the deal in a way that the book of business would pretty much pay for itself after a year. And then I was pretty much paying for equipment value. You know what I mean? So it was a really low multiple. It was like a 1x multiple, right? And so financially, it made a lot of sense at the time. And what ended up happening is within 30 days of acquiring the business, the person I had sold it to had completely gone off the grid, kind of like literally moved to another state, changed their phone number, like completely went off the grid. And all the equipment had broken down. And I had later found out that it was like extremely duct tape kind of jury rigged to the point where literally I have one of the biggest reasons I wanted to acquire them was they had a really nice expensive, what I thought was a really nice and expensive zero turn lawnmower. And that was going to infinitely increase the productivity and the efficiency of one of the crews. Right. And within 30 days, the engine had exploded, and to replace the engine would have cost more than to just buy a brand new zero turn, you know, from a dealer. So it was still, right. And that was majority of the investment was towards that huge piece of equipment. And then a couple other pieces of equipment had broken down. And then the largest client had fallen through because of miscommunication with the seller. That when I took over, they ended up hiring a different competitor because they didn't communicate the acquisition very well, which is partly my fault. And retrospectively, I could have done that. I could have been more proactive with the customers I was acquiring. You know what I mean? I had met most of them, you know, door to door, and had the seller introduce me, and I shook their hand and told them, hey, I'm going to be taking over your account. You know, I look forward to working with you, but I could have been a little bit more proactive in establishing that relationship and making sure that they were, you know, going to stay with me afterwards. But pretty much lost that entire investment. And it was a struggle to recoup that, but it was a really great learning experience. So
what, is there anything from that experience that you would say guides you to this day that from, I don't know what you would say, maybe that was like tearing a ligament in your knee for you, like a kind of a limp in your career and from early on,
yeah, right.
That, like, so such as, Adrian Peterson, he tore his, I think it was his ACL and his MCL, something like that. He tore up his knee. And I think that he worked on his leg routines, I think became evolved around building, you know, that strength around his knee. And then he came back and actually won rushing MVP the next year. Mm-hmm. So what would you say, like, how did you act as Adrian Peterson in that situation after taking that hit in your career? What did you use from that to kind of shape not making those same mistakes again to better increase the productivity, like you said, and retaining clients and just anything as far as acquiring and maybe in the acquiring process, how did that better your company in the future?
That's a great question. I'm actually going to be utilizing the things that I learned that when I was 17 today, like I literally after this podcast recording, I'm going to be calling one of my clients and having a hard conversation because with my company right now, Online Growth Systems, one of the services we provide is software development. And we are currently projected to be 10% over budget, or not over budget, over the estimate that we had for this particular software project, just because some of the APIs that we're integrating are a lot more complex than we were anticipating. So today I will literally be having, I'll be using some of my own advice or some of the things that I learned when I was 17. And that is, you know, to compare it to like the physical therapy of Adrian Peterson, you know, working on that knee to improve in the future is communication, having tough conversations and having that radical candor of, you know, whether that's with the seller or that's with the customers that I'm acquiring, the book of business, maybe talking to the mechanics that have worked on the equipment in the past. And I'm going to say, hey, before I buy this business, before I, you know, which includes this, you know, zero turn lawnmower, what can you tell me about this lawnmower? You know, and he's like, oh, dude, it's on its last leg. You know what I mean? You know, but, and realistically that wouldn't have been the case because the owner was the person who was the main mechanic. But you get the idea. I could have found a way to do something, maybe taking it to my own mechanic perhaps. And you know, being super detail oriented and having those tough conversations. And what I think is over communicating, really one of the biggest things I learned is there's no such thing as over communication. Right. And that was actually one of our, competitive advantages is we were everywhere. That's one of the reasons I grew that company so quickly when I was a kid is because none of my competitors were on social media. None of them had a website. None of them were going, you know, handing out flyers and making cold calls. All of them were words of mouth, referrals. You know, they have a sign on the side of their trailer or their truck, and they were just wait for business to come to them. I was proactive and I sought out new clients. And that's why we grew so quickly. You know, if somebody typed in on Google, you know, Lawn Care Sock Center, we were the only ones who showed up because I was the only one with a website, right? And I was the only one on social media, and we generated a lot of business that way. So I think those skill sets that I learned there turned into Online Growth Systems, right? But so I would say if I were to give the audience, your listeners, some tangible takeaways, it's number one, there's no such thing as over communication. If you think that you're being annoying, you're not. Okay. Like there's no such thing as over communication. Trust me. One thing that we do with our clients is we send out an agenda before the meeting so they know exactly what we're going to talk about. We read through the agenda at the beginning of the meeting. We perform the meeting. And then at the end, we do something called EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System. It's a way that you you operate as a business. And at the end, you do something called level 10 rating, which is you rate your meeting from 1 through 10, 1 being the worst meeting you've ever had, 10 being everything was perfect. Nobody, you know, we started on time, ended on time. It was efficient. Expectations were met. You know, it was productive, efficient, blah, blah, blah. So then we do what's called a retrospect, you know, level 10 rating. We say, I rate this meeting an 8 because I thought it was great content, but we were 2 minutes late to start. And we kind of dove into a little bit of a rabbit hole that we didn't need to, you know what I mean? And having that over communication and with online growth systems, the word that we really focus on is the word growth, right? So we always ask our clients, what's something that we can be improving? What is something that we can growth on? You know, what is something that we can do better for you in the future? And that constant improvement and that commitment towards being better is what makes us stand out and what keeps clients coming back and what generates new business and referrals.
Absolutely. So that's completely, completely correct with the communication. Even myself, as young as I am with what I've learned, even through my Creating Entrepreneurial Opportunities class, my CEO class is completely in alignment with what you said. There is no such thing as communication, and feedback is key to pleasing a customer. Right. And absolutely.
Right.
So you recently, pretty cool thing happened to you. You recently won the AdFed 32 Under 32 Award. For those of you who don't know, AdFed is over 100-year-old company. They're an advertising company that mentors and cultivates the Twin Cities market and its impact on the global community. And it really keeps an eye out on who is really impacting the industry and who's making a good mark. And so the 32 Under 32 celebrates the top young contributors to this industry and who makes an impact. And recently, you were named one of the 32 Under 32. And to me, this is like, it's like winning Rookie of the Year, because the 32 Under 32 is obviously an age target. You have to be young. You have to be under 32. So to me, that's like winning Rookie of the Year. For you, you just won Rookie of the Year. Tell me about how you, the process, the steps you took to put yourself in the position to win Rookie of the Year, and the work that went in, and what you would attribute maybe getting that award.
Yeah. So just to clarify, I was one of 32 people who have this, you know, honor. I wasn't the person, but I was one of 32 people who won this honor. But it was, and frankly, it was much more attributed to the skills and the strengths of my team and the relationships we have with our clients. So I like to say that I share this award with my team and with our clients, because I wouldn't even be on the radar without either of those groups. But if I were to name some things that led me towards being named on that list, compared to the other, you know, thousands of people in the industry that fit that description or that, you know, are in the marketing and advertising industry, I would say, I'm going to say two different things. Number one is having a personal brand in addition to your business, because all the individuals were named are, you know, some of them were from, like, you know, Carmichael, you know, Olson, LASIK, you know, these huge advertising companies, you know, that are, you know, serving Coca-Cola and, you know, doing Super Bowl ads, right? So they're, you know, part of it is, you know, the affiliation with those huge agencies. But what makes the 32 individuals that were one stand out is they, in addition to having that association with their agency, like for me, it's Online Growth Systems. For some of the other people, it's like Carmichael, right? Is they have a personal brand too. They're doing what I would say are the extracurriculars, right? They're, in addition to playing hockey on the ice, they're working out in the gym afterwards. You know what I mean? They're putting in extra hours. They're putting in things outside that outside of the expectations that the coach is asking them to do, right? Or what I would say is their agency, and uh-huh. They're performing on and off the ice. So for me, that's in addition to Online Growth Systems, you know, I have my own podcast. I have my own YouTube channel. I have my own blog. Our blog is actually our most popular platform. We have, you know, 10,000 monthly readers. You know, we have a huge newsletter called the Growthers Digest. Mm-hmm. So in addition to my company, I have that personal brand and I have that personal content. And, you know, I'm on the board of directors for an organization called Founders Live, Founders Live Minneapolis. We do local startup events. So if you've ever seen the show Shark Tank, it's a live Shark Tank that we host every month where five startups pitch their businesses for 99 seconds, followed by 4 minutes of Q&A, and the audience are the sharks. And I host that in addition to being on their board of directors, right? So there's the extracurricular piece that feeds into your personal brand. So I would say for people who are listening that want to really stand out in their industry, the way you stand out is you go above and beyond, right? And not and be a personality outside of your business identity. So that's kind of piece of advice number one. And then number two is really, really over deliver on your on the expectations of your clients, right? So what I like to do is if a client hired us for XYZ, I like to send, like for deliverables, I like to give them XYZ plus ABC. You know what I mean? We give them, you know, not that we're putting in double the hours that we were scoping, you know what I mean? Or, you know, we're sending them twice the amount of assets, but just overcommitting and going above and beyond and maybe putting in that little extra effort to over deliver. And number one, that's great for business because they, when they have a new project come up, you know, you're front and center, you're going to be the person they want to hire. And when they see other opportunities, they're going to send you referrals, right? So it's good for business, but it's also good for building that relationship and having that rapport. So I would say those are my two takeaways of kind of how I got named on that list. And if other people want to achieve something similar, what they could do.
So you had mentioned that you attribute much of the award to your team, which leads me into, so in 1980, you and I both know the Miracle on Ice, the USA hockey Olympic team won the gold medal. And so how this went was, so Herb Brooks, he got this team together. And at the time, I think many people were skeptical and kind of critical of how he put this team together. It wasn't the biggest, fastest, most skilled players from the NHL. It was this handpicked team that he had put together and in which he took to the championship mm-hmm. game and won gold against the Soviets. And I would compare that to you being the Herb Brooks of online grow systems. So tell me about how you picked out that team like he did and what makes it work together that I believe that your company is so teamwork oriented that makes the machine turn, that makes it go, and why it has worked so successful for you.
So if I were to compare myself to Herbie Hancock. No, I'm just kidding. Tommy Boy reference for anybody who's listening. If I were to compare myself, or if I were to say, to answer your question of building that team, right, and having, you know, like I said earlier, they're a large reason of why Online Growth Systems is, you know, the size that we are and we've achieved the success that we've achieved is because I like to work with the best, right? And I like to, I'm particularly picky about the people that we bring in on our team because our culture is so important. And I know that every freaking business owner says that, but we really do focus on the word growth. So one thing that I do in the interview process is I ask them, how do you implement growth in your daily life? And depending on their answer, that is actually the question that I give the most weight to, because and I've practiced this in every business that I've owned, whether that's Everything Property Maintenance back in the day or Rhino Tools when I was in college or Online Growth Systems today, is I would rather hire somebody who might not have the skills now, but they have the ambition and the drive and the willingness to learn. Right? Versus someone who has, they're super, right, super skilled, but they're not coachable. They're not teachable. You know, they're not willing to improve, grow. Right. Mm-hmm. I would 10 times out of 10, I pick the person that's, that is maybe lacking in the skill sets because that's something that they can gain. You can learn how to be a better graphic designer. You can write cleaner code. You know, you can run a better marketing campaign, right? I mean, shit, there's a million resources out there. You mm-hmm. can just freaking watch YouTube videos and, you know, for 3 months and come out of that and be a spectacular ad management person, right? It's, you don't have to go to 4 years of college for that, right? So that's something that I take super seriously in our interview process. And I even did that back in high school with our lawn care business. I had two part-time people and both of them wanted to scale to full-time and I had to pick one. And I chose the person that their lines on the lawnmower weren't the straightest, but every time I talked to them and gave them constructive criticism or feedback, they instantly implemented whatever I recommended, you know what I mean? Versus the other person who, you know, was a really, really good, I could trust them to just go do a lawn by themselves and it would look fantastic. But whenever I gave them feedback about how to do it better, you know, they were like, nope, this is how I do it. You know what I mean? To circle back, that's kind of how it's evolved over time. So that's part of the interview process. And then we do something called daily stand-ups, right? So that's a software development thing. With my team member, Adam, you know, a year ago, you know, he was working on HubSpot projects for our clients. And he was constantly looking for ways to improve those marketing campaigns. So we were with HubSpot, we do a lot of email marketing for, you know, $200 million clients, all the way down to 100 or all the way down to $1 million clients, right? That's kind of the niche we play in. And he was constantly saying, like, how could I improve this particular workflow? Or how can I improve this email campaign? How can I increase open rate, delivery rate, click-through rate, revenue generation from this email campaign? And we saw both our clients' return on investment increase over time as he was striving towards improvement. But he himself, he got faster. He got better at it. And that is the kind of team member I like to have on my team, is somebody like Adam who constantly is looking to improve themselves. And that's what makes our team awesome. And just kind of give a shout out to some of our team members, you know, Patrick, he's our UX designer. He worked for Apple. Like, he was working on their keyboard team in California, working on the keyboards that you and I won't see for 5-6 years, like shit. That's like seriously like 5 years in the future that he's under crazy NDAs, you know, and they've got patent. They don't even file a patent, right? Because they don't want the patent office to, you know, publicly release what their designs are yet. You know what I mean? So super skilled. But what, you know, somebody like Patrick is, he's constantly looking for ways to improve. And that's my favorite thing, is when our team members do what they do outside of 9 to 5, that's when you know that they've got that passion and that fire, right? So that's when they're working on, you know, our software developers, a lot of the times they have their own little projects, like for fun projects. Like they're, oh yeah, I'm making my own video game and evenings and weekends just for fun. And then, you know, and then they work for online growth systems Monday through Friday. You know what I mean? Like, that's the shit that I look for. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that individual drive. So you're just saying, in part, you just find the right people and then just set them in the right direction and then let the leash go. And then they do half it for you. And then, you know what I mean? When you have those right people in your system, and it just makes everything so much easier, and the quality is better. And absolutely.
Definitely. I mean, Herb Brooks couldn't be the person on the ice, you know, he couldn't put on the skates and grab the stick and go check the Soviets into the boards. You know what I mean? He has to trust his players to perform in the game, you know, and then off the ice, you know, outside of the game, you know, he can coach all he wants. But what matters at the end of the day is if the players are listening and they actually take Herb's advice and actually implement that during game time, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think that your work, your team's work, speaks for itself when you look at all the project that Online Growth Systems has knocked out of the park, with the quality that you guys have by meshing together so well, by communicating, like you said earlier, no such thing as over communication. And and from looking at one thing, as far as you know, you look at the Miracle on Ice, a great achievement comparing to Online Growth Systems. As Minnesota natives, let's look at maybe the opposite of that. Back when the Vikings were the Purple People Eaters, they went to the Super Bowl 4 times and every time could not pull out the W, always fell short, and did not go home with the Lombardi Trophy. So if you could find one thing, maybe in your entire career or in Online Growth Systems, that you, it felt like the Super Bowl. You were going to the Super Bowl. What would you, first of all, let's start with this. What would you do in preparation for that Super Bowl? What do you do for that big moment so that you do not fall short?
Mm-hmm. So you're asking,
what do you do?
You're
what
asking
do?
Me, you're asking me right. What we do to prepare for the Super Bowl or how do we prep for games or what do you mean?
How do you prepare for that Super Bowl? That big, that say it's somebody going to a Founders Live and they're pitching that mm-hmm. business. How they would prepare for that mm-hmm. pitch. How do you prepare for the big moment? How do you ensure that you do not fall short, whether it's your biggest client and their biggest project, before you even start on that project? Maybe it's little mental things. Yeah. Maybe it's big meetings you have. What are the things that you do to ensure your success?
That's a great question. Okay, now I gotcha. So our name is extremely intentional. Our company name is extremely intentional. So online growth systems. So online, we don't play around with, we don't do any radio. We don't do any TV ads. We don't do any billboards. We're strictly digital. You know what I mean? If a client is looking for newspaper or magazine ads, we try to convince them not to, but we send them we refer them, right? Because we're strictly digital. That's our niche, right? Growth obviously is extremely important. I've mm-hmm. touched on that. And then systems is the third word in our company name. And that's also how we achieve excellence, is because, and through that growth, you know, we're constantly improving our own systems. Like just yesterday, actually conveniently, I already mentioned Adam in this podcast. Adam and I were having our daily stand up at the end of the day for his projects that he's working on. And we thought of a way that we can improve our email communication with our client, right? Oh, man, this particular story is like looping in three things we've talked about already. But we're working on a project with our client, and we said, why don't we, in our email recap, we actually, in addition to all the meetings agenda stuff that I talked about earlier, after the meeting, we send them a follow-up email and say, hey, just to remind you what we talked about, we talked about A, B, and C. And then yesterday, Adam and I were thinking, at the end of each meeting, we say, what's one growth idea we have for the day? We do this daily, Gabe, right? So we say, so my growth idea for the day yesterday was, hey, let's add what everybody rated the meeting in our follow-up emails. So that's something that we implemented that growth idea using communication into our systems. So we have email templates that we have that everybody in our organization uses. So we particularly use Google Drive because I like it. It's a collaborative tool and it's very affordable. So we went into our Google Drive account and we went to the email template that all of our team members use for follow-ups with clients. And we added a bullet point at the end of that email template that said level 10 ratings. And then we'd say, you know, person one, person two, person three, example 10, 10, 8, 10, you know what I mean? So going forward, as of yesterday, all of our follow-up emails that we have with clients, with all of our team members now include what everybody in that particular meeting, you know, we're using Zoom right now because a lot of our meetings are virtual. And it reminds everybody what their ratings were. Because we just realized, man, we get a lot of nines and tens with our clients in our meetings, and that's a good way to build rapport and remind them of how well the meetings went. And if they gave us a seven or a six or shit, even a five, you know what I mean? Then we're going to make some bullet points as to why we rated that meeting a five and say like, hey, going forward, we're going to be doing A, B, and C differently to improve for the next time. And I think that's going to improve our communication. It's going to let them know that, hey, we're committed to improvement and we're committed to your success, right? So to answer your question about how do we prep for the Super Bowl, what's our pregame, you know, strategy? We prep by using systems. And whether it's a sales call, if it's a prospecting call, or if I'm trying to close a deal, I do my research, right? I research the client. If I'm interviewing somebody on my podcast, right, I research the guest. And I have a checklist that I go through, you know, and that checklist is constantly evolving and changing over time because obviously we're growing, right? And when we run through that checklist and we utilize systems and we're not just winging it and walking into conversations blind, that's what sets us up for success. Or to bring in another sports metaphor, that's what's teeing us up for success, right? So we can get a hole in one. Mm-hmm. So.
So you can stay on. Yeah, a hole mm-hmm. in one, even better. There you go. So if you could end with for our listeners, any one piece of advice that you could just tell them could be as simple as always have a smile on your face, or for, you know, as Wayne Gretzky said, you miss 100% of the shots you never take. So just take that leap, even if you have no idea mm-hmm. if it's going to work. If you had one piece of advice that you could end with giving to our listeners, what would it be?
I'm going to give you two things. I'm going to give you the best piece of advice that I've ever heard. And then I'm going to give you a little quotable can of wisdom that I like to use with a lot of my clients. So first, the best piece of advice okay. that I've ever received was actually from our dad. Shocker. No, I'm just kidding. when I was with Everything Property Maintenance growing up, it got to the point where I asked dad some questions about business, and I was asking him because I was struggling with scaling and I had some questions about, you know, team members, whatever. And he sat me down and he looked me in the eye and he said, "Dick, you employ more people than I ever have at this point. I don't have a clue how to answer the question you're asking me." He said, so this is where the piece of advice came in. He said, "You should seek out advice from people who have been where you want to go." And that piece of advice was by far the best I've ever received in my life. And that has set me up for success in so many ways. And that's what got me reading books. And that's what got me listening to podcasts and watching TED Talks and interviewing other entrepreneurs and taking people out to dinner and calling those big names. You know what I mean? I'm sure there's some of your listeners here, Adam Gable. He was somebody that I took out to lunch a couple of years ago. And I said, "Hey, I know that you own, you know, 20 different Napa auto parts stores. You know, how did you achieve your success? Because I know that part of his strategy was acquisition, and that's something that I also want to pursue." You know, so asking people who have been where you want to go, how they got there, so they can give you a roadmap. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you're just blindly, you're taking a machete through the jungle, right? Why not find somebody with a map who's been to the destination you're trying to get to? So that was by far the best piece of advice I ever got. Right. And that little canned quotable piece of wisdom is, this is something I use with a lot of my clients. It's hard to read the label when you're inside the box. It's hard to read the label when you're inside the box. So I think that's something that a lot of our clients struggle with, and sometimes I personally struggle with, and I think every human, frankly, is you get so encompassed in your own world that the answer might be super obvious to everybody else, but you just can't quite see it. So a good way to solve that, right, is to just have a conversation with somebody you trust, that gets you, right? So every year I do an annual review, and I look back and at my businesses and myself personally, and I say, what did I do well this year? What didn't I do well this year? And how am I going to change that approach for this coming year? And I do that every December. I take like 3 days and block it off my calendar and do a super deep session. Right. And I usually bring our brother Noah in for those conversations, and he literally like lives with me for 3 days. And we, because that outside, that third party perspective, that second set of eyes, you know, if I say, "Noah, we doubled our sales this year, but I'm struggling to figure out how we're going to, you know, fulfill all this." And then the answer is very obvious. He says, "Well, why don't you hire Adam full time instead of part time?" Well, duh. Yeah, that's an obvious answer. But right. when you're in the trenches, it's not always that obvious. So that's kind of like the little quotable piece of wisdom I like to use a lot.
And Dick, where can people find you on social media or anywhere so that they can find more about you and follow you?
So you can check out me personally. The best piece of social media to follow me on is probably LinkedIn. I'm extremely active on LinkedIn. I've got a pretty decent following there, and that's where I'm the most active. Otherwise, second is Twitter. If they're on Twitter, they can go to twitter.com/dpolipnick, Polipnickthose are probably the two platforms I'm the most active. Well, obviously YouTube, you know, we pump out YouTube videos like crazy. If they want to check out our podcast, they can see guests on that show as well. But if they want to check out any of our services or our company, that's onlinegrowthsystems.com. And we're happy to have some conversations with any of your listeners that are looking to scale their companies online. So
Well, awesome. Thank you again for the time today, for talking to me. I appreciate taking that shot, as we were talking about. You don't know if it's going to score, but taking that shot with coming on the podcast with me as the very first one, I really appreciate it. And I think, ladies and gentlemen, it's safe to say that when we took this shot that we scored on this interview. So thank you, Dick.
Gabe. This was fun.
Yeah, we should probably going to be a future episode down the line. So look forward for Dick Blitnick part 2, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks,
all right,
Dave.
Thanks, Dick.